The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, we do. Welcome to the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Adam William Arbuthnot with Mr. Mo and Joel Johnson. Gentlemen, how is it going?
I'm ready to talk. Let's do it. Let's get right to it. Let's not let Joel screw it up and talk anymore. Just keep it to you and me. We were having a good conversation, waiting for him, talking sports, and now let's just keep talking sports.
Yeah, why not? It's been much more exciting than the WWE. But,
all right, Joel, how the hell was Mania?
That's what I was going to say. Joel talked about waiting in the rain, but not in Africa in front of MetLife.
Man, only if you could have been out there stranded. That'd be
I
nice.
Saw the rain in MetLife.
Mania, like, overall, like, this was an incredible experience because, like, just I got too sweeted in just random spots in New York. Like, there was other wrestling fans all around. Just the different wrestling merch. I saw Jay White on the street trying to hail a cab down. I got to see Bad Luck Fale up at close and personal on the side of the road, just wandering around, checking out restaurants. It just, like, little moments like that are what just made it incredible to be there. And you just could feel it in Manhattan. Just the excitement around NXT, the excitement around the G1, just how traffic flowed in and out of Barclays and the MSG was just amazing. How well they had everything organized. Just New York in general was an incredible experience. I think this, if there's any Mania to go, minus the shenanigans of after WrestleMania, it was just incredible. And even Mania itself, it was really long, too long. It was way too bloated. But just to be there and the different moments that you got to see and experience live and just the different music that you heard and just everything you got to see was just incredible. Like this, I can never look back on this Mania and think negatively on it, minus the New Jersey Transit screwery. But it is just incredible. I'll never forget that weekend and just the things that I saw and got to experience. I feel like I got every little moment that I could have wanted from this. Like, seeing Okada win was great. Seeing Johnny win was incredible. I've never seen a crowd bite on more false finishes than that. Like, there were points where people were half standing up, kind of trying to, almost like they were surfing in their chair of just shooting up and then falling back down, shooting back up and falling back down. And like seeing Kofi win was great. Hearing Becky's music and seeing her come out and have her moment, which was very highly contested outside the arena of if that was a botch or not. And just it was incredible. I don't think I can say a negative thing about the show, other than Mania was too long, but just being there and being in that atmosphere and being with a friend that likes wrestling as well was just incredible. Like the fact that the vacation was built around wrestling and we just spent the whole weekend talking wrestling and just being able to talk about what we saw was is amazing. As a wrestling fan, you are doing yourself a disservice if you're not at least going around for Mania Week. You don't necessarily have to go for Mania, but just being able to see the other shows and see the other events is just incredible. And if you go to a city that's lesser than what Manhattan is, because Manhattan, I felt like I needed another week there just to see everything and to experience more. But if you go to a lesser town that doesn't have as many tourist must-see things, then you could probably spend a whole week in just wrestling, and it'd be amazing.
Talk about waiting in the rain.
See, that seems to be your focal point. I don't like you.
Well, I mean, that's
the
thing that, you know, draw a lot of attention, and you hear Brian Alvarez's story. His is just dumbassery because he had a chance to get a bus and he decided.
Well,
to
it
not
didn't
get
matter.
The bus.
It didn't matter. You can't say it's dumbassery. You weren't there, so you didn't see firsthand.
Well, he said he had a bus that went right to his hotel, but instead he like stayed behind because he thought he could get an Uber right away.
So what happened was the event ended at 12 midnight Eastern, so it'd be 10 o'clock Mountain. We got out of there. We got out of there fairly quickly. I'd say we probably were out and we touched ground outside of the stadium probably within 10 minutes, which I consider a pretty good flow for everything. And we got out and we look around and we're looking for the bus stop where we're supposed to go because we got round trip bus transit for through Port Authority through New Jersey. And we finally found the spot that the bus was because nothing was marked. Let me be clear. The only two things that were marked was an arrow that generically pointed you to the train line and another arrow that pointed you to where the Ubers slash cabs were. So they had no real markings for the buses. They had real no organization once you left the stadium. And so we're looking for the buses and we can't find them until we finally do find them. But we find them, say, 10 minutes after we get out of the stadium, and the lineup is already, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, about 400-500 people already in line for the bus. And so we get in line, and we meet a fellow from Memphis, and we're kind of talking, and we're talking about the show and everything, and then New Jersey Transit Authority is coming by, and like, you have about a four-hour wait, maybe. You might not even get a bus. It could be a four-hour wait. But you probably aren't going to get a bus. So we're like, well, screw it. The three of us will split an Uber. So we start walking back to the stadium. This is about a 15-minute walk from the stadium. We were pretty quick to get to the spot, but we were kind of walking slowly back because we were like, well, maybe it'll clear out. And while we're doing this, the Uber site is down. So we can't get an Uber right away, but we keep trying. We finally get an Uber, and it's about $100 American. For this Uber, and we have about four or five Ubers that pass us by, say that they're a minute away, and then the Uber driver cancels. And we find out later that it's because people are seeing the little glowing sign for the Ubers on the vehicles, and they're jumping on them right away and going, we'll offer you like $600-$700 to take us, which is more than what they would have made off of our fare. So we're left stranded. It's pouring rain. There's the arena around us is filled with people that are stranded. And like we're sitting there and we're talking wrestling, we're talking hockey, we're talking just everything in general. And we're like, okay, when's this Uber? And we're finally like, well, maybe we'll give the train a go. And we start walking to where the train is because we get told it's free to get to Syracuse, and then from Syracuse you have to pay a ticket to get to Port Authority, which Port Authority is right near Times Square. So that's about a half-hour walk from the room that we were staying in. And as we go and do this, we see the exact same lineup that you would see for the bus, but for the train, and it's still there. But that exact same lineup is still there because they cut off trains at 1 a.m. So the trains were no longer running. So people were sitting there stranded. I think there was another train that came up. I believe they had called that to try to alleviate some of the pressure, and it was like a stampede. Like, it was mass pandemonium to get onto this train. And you saw, like, I saw Frank the Clown and Foley's daughter stranded outside the stadium waiting for an Uber. And by this point, we're like, well, what do we do? This is closing in on about 2:30, about 3 o'clock, and we're like, well, what are we going to do? Like, we don't have any idea on what our next step is, because where the Ubers and cabs are supposed to be, there's not a single cab in sight. The bus line is still massive and they're not really moving quick. The train's useless by this point, and all transit authorities are starting to leave. So they're starting to leave everyone else high and dry. We're like, oh crap, what do? We try an Uber one last time, and we finally get like a, it was a sketchy cab, but he was like $100 per group, and we end up meeting this British couple that is from Hong Kong. They travel 19 hours for WrestleMania. So we get into this cab all together, and he said he'll drop us off by Times Square, which is good enough for us. We just wanted to get back into Manhattan. And we just talk about wrestling, and we talk about what we liked and what we didn't like, and we finally get out of the cab. The cabbie kind of rips us off a bit, but I don't think any of us cared because we got back to Manhattan. By 3:30 a.m., I was soaked to the bone, but back in my hotel and ready for another adventurous day in Manhattan. But that New Jersey MetLife Stadium should never host a big event because they just don't know how to handle 80,000 people pouring out of their stadium and how to get them back to Manhattan. Because that was the main spot a lot of people wanted to get back to, was Manhattan. Thinking about it now, what we should have done is we should have walked a half hour to the hotel that was near there, because we should have either booked a night in that hotel to make it a lot easier, or we should have just walked to that hotel to get them to call us a cab, or we should have rented a vehicle. Either of those would have been 10 times easier to get back home into Manhattan than to go through the trouble that we did. And it wasn't just us. There were people that slept at MetLife. There were families that were stranded there. I just thought it was very poor planning. And to be honest, I don't blame WWE for this at all. I put the blame solely on New Jersey Transit and their total lack of confidence. And
okay, but you understand that WWE gave them a time that they were going to end at and then didn't end at that time. And
WWE didn't give them a time, apparently. They were under an impression of how long wrestling shows ran. And the same thing happened with the Super Bowl, where they were under impression of how long a Super Bowl runs. WWE never gave them a time where it ended. And I will say, like, for a month, we had talked about the show was going to be 7 hours long. But WWE never gave them a time, and that's something that even the mayor had brought up for the transit of, why was this not communicated better with the WWE?
Yeah, that's, if that's the case, then it's absolutely a failure of communication. Like, this, for something like this, you absolutely need to talk. You need to figure this out.
That's the thing. This is, you can put the blame, you can't put the blame just on them. This is both parties.
Yeah.
It's absolutely both parties. WWE went on a Sunday when transit is known to not be what it normally is. Incredibly late.
The thing is, I felt as though transit was already running on a Sunday schedule. Like, I didn't feel like they were running where this was an event that you expect 80,000 people. Like, the blame's on both parties, but I feel like New Jersey Transit should have at least been somewhat prepared for a massive influx of people coming in. Like, seeing the picture of the Syracuse train station, I'm glad I didn't get on that because that was packed to the gills. Like, it just, I don't know, if you're going to host a big event like that, you should be crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's.
I got out of WrestleMania 31 when I went to it. It took me till 1:30 in the morning to get home, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, this is a thing for all big events. If you go to the Super Bowl, it is the same thing. If you go to whatever, I waited for 3 hours to be able to get out of there.
Yeah.
To be able to take the train. So, I mean, it's not just a New York thing. I mean, nobody's ready for it.
And it's not a New York thing. This is WWE, New Jersey.
If WWE wants to run until 12:30 at night, they should put their event on a goddamn Saturday. Straight up. They got to change the way they're... If they want to be doing the things the way that they want to do them, they got to change things. They got to be more aware of the world around them.
Yeah.
They should be doing it. That should absolutely be... Either that should absolutely be. There's no reason WrestleMania has to be on a Sunday. Absolutely no reason.
No, and that's fair. Like, you could run an event to any day of the week, really and truly. It felt like the fact, like, and the positive out of all this for me was I got to meet a ton of wrestling fans. Like, there were a ton of wrestling fans that were in the same boat that we were, and getting to hang around and chat with them was great. Like, I got to meet someone from Memphis, and I got to meet someone that lived in Hong Kong that flew 19 hours to be at this event. So that to me was incredible. But I don't know, it was one of those experiences where it's just I take some blame of not planning better and getting a backup of the backup of the backup. I thought having a little bit would have been fine, but we should have planned a little bit better. But it just, it was definitely an experience.
Yeah, it's something you're never going to forget.
It is a great experience. I mean, the thing is, they put on a great show. Even if the event isn't great, the show is great, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they did go too long. I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
No question, they went too long. And it's partial, but, you know, it's when you're there, you're in the moment, it's much better live than anywhere else. I mean, it's the place to be.
Yeah.
It really is. It's there's something, and there is that commonality with people that are other wrestling fans, and you can talk wrestling, and like you say, strangers will come up to you and talk to you and comment on your shirts or whatever, and it's just there's the community is there.
Yeah.
That's what, when they say WWE Universe, there it actually feels like it when you're at a WrestleMania.
Yes, absolutely. Like there, to me, just it's still the one of the memories is just walking out of the NHL store and getting too sweated because I had a Marty shirt on because I was going to the MSG show that night. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh crap, this is really cool because I recognize that. And this massive city and just the different shirts you'd see and the different, just the different characters and the different people that you'd see. Like Brock Lesnar guy walked by me, then we all know about him. But it's still one of those things where it's like, oh, he's one of those dorks on TV and he just walked by me. That's kind of weird to see because you see so much of this always just on TV. Like seeing Batista live, like that is someone I never thought I would see live performing, and I got to see his last match. So that, say what you will about the match, but getting to hear that music and seeing Batista come out was pretty cool. And he's Drax, Guardians of the Galaxy, so that's another little wrinkle to that. Seeing Cena, the Dr. Thugonomics, come out was something that's like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. Like that was neat to see and be a part of live. Having Kofi win the title, like how many people were genuinely happy around me between the kids and just grown adults that were jumping up and down like they were kids, just celebrating that victory was really cool to see. And I mean, the number of people that turned their back on Hogan when he came out, there were quite a few people that just stood up, turned around and didn't acknowledge that Hulk Hogan was in the ring or on the front of the stage.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was the one thing.
That's certainly interesting. I mean, he got a massive pop.
Yeah, but
you know, and he got a big pop at the Hall of Fame too. But that's very interesting.
Yeah, there were at least there was a good handful of people that in our section that did that. I don't know if it was because we were higher up. But it just, he got a big reaction. And, I mean, that's Hulk Hogan. That's a big part of why WrestleMania exists. He was one of the many pillars that Mania was built upon. So
it doesn't exist without him.
No.
It doesn't. It straight up doesn't.
So that's neat to see him. But just to see the number of people that turned their back and just haven't forgiven Hulkamania for the things that he's done and said was I was a little surprised. Like there were some grown adults that almost jumped out of, almost fell down a couple flights of stairs when he came out. They were so excited, but there were the other ones that were the exact opposite of that reaction.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Ask any other questions? Anything else?
No.
Casaninzo.
So, oh man, I was so mad that happened because that just sucked the energy out of the arena when that happened. Finding out it was a work and everything just makes it almost more annoying, especially considering Tanahashi came out next. Like, I didn't enjoy Zack Sabre's entrance at all because I was still caught up in this pandemonium of this blonde tuft of hair and Big Cass and Bully Ray, and I saw one of the Briscoes hopping around limping like he was hurt. It was this whole thing, and it was just a shit show, and crowd wasn't happy about it. WWE lighting sucks for certain sections. They blinded people at least twice. They did that during the NXT show. They blinded a section for the tag team match. That's when they had some rest holds on and you hear a massive pop, that's because they finally turned the lights on. And then the AJ and Randy match was ruined for certain people because they were blinded by this massive bright light shined on them. So twice the lighting impacted.
But again, the scary thing is that that's been happening for years. It happened at the NXT show I was at WrestleMania 31. It happened at the Royal Rumble I was at. They don't seem to learn this stuff.
No,
that's the thing that's bad about that. It's not that it happened this time. It's that it happened again. And people may not realize it, but that's it's been going on for a hell of a long time.
I didn't realize brutal. That at all. So for you to say that is just downright terrible. And how many? You went to 31, so this was 35. So there's
And like I say, it happened at the Royal Rumble I was at too, and that was not 31. That would have been the one for I don't know, the one where The Rock beat CM Punk. So whenever that was. So that's years ago too. So I mean, like I say, this 13. Has been, and I'm sure you can find other, you know, I'm sure you can find other examples of that. So there.
Because that definitely, like there were points that you could tell when the crowd just didn't care or things. Like I found that to be a distraction live because suddenly you've got this massive small section booing and yelling, and it's like, well, what the hell is going on? And you're kind of looking to try to figure it out, and then you get those random chants of like turn off the light or
turn the lights off. Was the chant that was going through the night that I was there.
It was a similar chant there, and it's like, oh, okay, now I get it. And it was just like, ah man, like figure your shit out, WWE. The interesting thing, I don't know if it was the card placement, but Roman got kind of a lackluster reaction, at least from where I was sitting. It didn't seem to be all that big.
Was that because of the Kofi match? The Kofi match happened just before, right?
Yeah, I believe that was the placement, and like Kofi and the crowd was too busy singing Backstreet Boys. They actually started singing I Want It That Way. They started singing That's Sweet funny. Caroline. They started doing the wave. Like the Drew Roman match just was met with total apathy. And I don't know if that's the card placement or just speaking to Roman as a whole. I mean, Roman had the most pyro out of anyone for Mania. I felt live that he got the loudest pyro and the biggest, most grandiose and entrance out of everyone.
Well, he didn't really get a reception on SmackDown tonight, so I think people very much seem indifferent. It seems like people don't want to boo him, but it also seems people don't want to cheer him, so they're just going to not do anything now. It's really awkward, because that's what I felt like it was on SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, see, and I think that's the thing moving forward. That again, is an example of things that they have to figure out, is the guy is still positioned. He is at the front of all your promotional stuff now moving forward, from SummerSlam to Survivor Series. He's your central figure, but when you're sitting there and like that reaction, I sat there and it's like, this is interesting. I'm interested to see how this plays out further. And it just, I don't know, it's just a sign of the times, I guess, with WWE.
One last question I had. What you were in Japan when this happened, but what was the reaction to the Brett thing as it was happening, and how did the buzz get going with it?
No, there's no buzz around me. No one was talking. I don't think I had a conversation with anyone about it around me, except for my buddy, and then just you guys online, and then just reacting to it via social media. There was no big talk about it around the town, and there's nothing really major. Brett got a massive pop when he came out. It felt like he got a standing ovation, or at least as close to a standing ovation as you could get from 80,000 people that were heading in and out of the arena at different points. He got a decent reaction, but really wasn't the talk of town by any stretch of the imagination.
It was here. That's the funny thing. Literally everyone I talked to, even family members that weren't wrestling fans, were just like, did you hear what happened to Brett? And it was like the front of the Sun. And I think that at the Herald, there was a minor thing. It was everywhere in Calgary the next day.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty hilarious.
I heard about it. There were a bunch of people from work that was messaging me because that was one of the big stories. So it was.
Yeah, you felt how big he was.
It was massive, but it was also at the same time I don't know if it's the whirlwind, because we didn't go to Raw or SmackDown at all, and I think I think that proved to be the wise choice.
Hell yeah.
It was one of the few times where I'm like, we were sitting there, we were thinking about, because like I said, we didn't get back till 3:30, and we went to Central Park and wandered around Central Park, which is absolutely gorgeous. And I want to go to Central Park in the summer. But we were going through there, we were like, do we go to Raw? Like, do we just try and get tickets and go to Raw? And we were kind of hemming and hawing at it, and then we're like, we won't worry about it. And then saw Taker, and it was like, oh, that really sucks. Ah, oh, damn it. And then we saw how everything played out, and we're like, oh, no, it wasn't, damn it. It was the right call. Barclays, the security and how they run things in Barclays is impressive as hell. It's so smooth how they run things at Barclays. The only issue I had with Barclays was you don't have a lot of leg room to move, and if you set food or a drink down, you're cutting off the room for the people that are trying to walk in front of you.
Was it worse than the ACC seats?
It's almost exactly the same as the ACC, except it doesn't feel like the chairs are clumped together. So you have a little bit more room chair wise, but feet moving wise is very limited. But
it's the one thing I've even talking to people that have gone to Rogers Place in Edmonton, having some conversations about that over Easter dinner, saying the same thing about Rogers Place. It's a new arena thing. I don't know what it is. I think it's just because they want to get as much seats as they can. Well, the older arenas, then I guess, didn't think about that as much, but these new arenas seem to just want to space everything together as much as possible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But, I didn't feel like I didn't feel like shoulders were touching. Like, I felt like I had room there. It was just, when it came to feet, like, it was more, it's not about the width, it was the length, and it felt like my feet were spending more time kind of kicking the seat in front of me, partly because I had nowhere else to place my feet. So it was one of those things where it's like, oh, this is really snug. Like, they definitely packed this place in. MSG was gorgeous. MSG, I loved MSG. Like, just the staff there was incredibly nice, and they were incredibly efficient again. We were actually at the bar stools, and the bar stools were amazing because you had like a little table in front of you, so you could set your drink and your food in front of you, and you got to sit there and you got to watch wrestling. It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed where I was seated for MSG, and to see Okada win the IWGP Heavyweight Title is something I'm never gonna forget. Seeing Ibushi win was incredible. Taven won me over. It was cool to see Marty and hear that music and be part of the Marty entrance, but seeing Okada was amazing, and same with Tanahashi. Though I didn't get to enjoy Tanahashi as much because of the stupidity of ROH beforehand.
What was the biggest surprise of the week? Muda? Was that the biggest? That's one of the things I was the most jealous of personally.
That was pretty wild. I didn't expect that. When I saw the words Great Muda pop up, I was like, holy crap. That was crazy. Suzuki got a good reaction. But Muda was probably the biggest surprise. And I think Johnny winning was the biggest surprise. I didn't expect Johnny to win at all.
The best match?
I think so. To me personally, as a fan of Johnny Gargano, and fought both of you ferociously on the podcast saying that I want Johnny to win, and that's the reason why, I got what I wanted, and I'm happy that I got what I wanted. To me, that was the match of the weekend.
I think that's the best match of the year so far. You know what, that match, I had made the argument that it should be, that the chase should start anew, that the storyline was with a different guy. And so the chases started anew with Gargano and Cole. But that night, seeing how it played out, no, it was totally the right move to put it on Gargano there. Absolutely the right thing.
When when Undisputed hit their tag team move, I thought it was over. When Cole hit his moves, I thought it was over. I thought it was done. And then the fact that
Cole beat him early with a move, and then they went back to the move, and he moved his knee pad down so that the move the second time would be more devastating. Plus, there was all the extra damage. The psychology behind that to make the crowd bite on that as a finish was brilliant. Just brilliant.
Amazing job. Cole probably got the pop of the weekend, minus Kofi's title win. But I feel like Cole got the biggest reaction of anyone coming out. And when Johnny had to work to gain the crowd, and I feel like by the end of it, Johnny had won that crowd. And when Ciampa came out, that whole moment, that on the steps was just, it was incredible. Like that just seeing that live and seeing Ciampa there. And I was so happy to see Ciampa walking, especially after the surgery and everything he had gone through prior to that. To see him up and moving and around there was just one of those moments as like, this is amazing.
It was a WrestleMania moment, and in some ways, it's like the moment we needed to almost, it's been a long time, but almost erase the WrestleMania 20 moment. Like it was that type of moment.
Yes, and
that's what, you know, we can finally maybe focus on that as the moment instead. So that was really cool.
Go ahead, Joel.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. Like just seeing that. I know that they had a weird cut on the broadcast. I've heard they've gone back and since edited it out, but it was kind of weird seeing that because I was like, I just want to see the close-up of the two of them hugging. Like this has been such a war, and to see this moment and then to see Ciampa kind of playfully try to throw Candace into the screen in the front of the entrance ramp is just, it was a feel-good moment, and I think you've absolutely kind of summarized that. It's on level with WrestleMania 20.
It made me cry. I'm not gonna say anything. Not afraid to admit it. It actually made me cry. I was just like, this is how wrestling can be effective as a storytelling, as a piece of art. It was just so triumphantly, perfectly done. Even Ciampa kind of talked about it on ENC, saying like, you know, he kind of had gone back and forth on like, should I come out, should I not? And he's like, no, it just made the most sense to end a perfectly written story.
You think about all the bumps in the road that story's had, and all the bumps in the road Johnny's had, and to finally get to that moment, just, he won the crowd over, and it was just, when you finally got to see Johnny hoist that title, this is the second time I've gotten to see Johnny hoist a title, so I'm really, that was really awesome. My thing is, with how things have gone at New Japan, and with Kenny being on the shelf right now, to me, I think Gargano's the wrestler of the year right now. That'll probably change as we get to December and we look at everything encapsulated. But just right now, I think Gargano may be the wrestler of the year.
It's very early, but I think considering the New Japan Cup was unbelievable, that there's three or four guys in New Japan ahead of him, whereas he's had the match of the year. But I don't think you can put it on the level of like Okada and Tanahashi and Ishii. These guys had multiple matches near that level at this point. So
yeah, that's totally fair. And
the G1's coming up.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing, and that's why I say it's early, because the G1's just gonna
Kenny Omega's had what, one match this year? Yeah. So far.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's crazy. Yeah.
Don Callis pinned him.
Did he?
You didn't hear about that?
No.
Well, I was in an indie show in Winnipeg. He was part of a six man, and Don Callis pinned him in front of like.
They always do funky stuff in those Winnipeg shows, though, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, I'm really glad you got to have that week, Joel. You got to enjoy it, and I'm kind of glad that it's a week that you never get to forget, that you kind of got to have wrestling euphoria.
So you don't have a lot of stories of interactions with actual wrestlers, or you didn't go to any autograph things?
No. Like,
I remember he went down there and just hanging out with Demolition for 20 minutes and just shooting the shit about them telling us stories about trying to get to the border to Canada and things like that. Like, you didn't get things like that?
No. To me, this trip was two things. It was those wrestling the wrestling shows, and a lot of it was just the photography and exploring New York. Like that filled my soul. If this was a Tampa or a city where I was more inclined to lounge around for 8 hours, I probably would have spent more time around and gone to the WrestleCons and the fan access and done things like that. But between the wrestling, I probably on my feet for 12 hours most days, except for Mania. I was on my feet for about 12 to 14 hours, either taking pictures or going to wrestling or wandering around random boroughs in New York. Like that was the whole other side of the trip, and I loved every second of it. I have nothing but nice things to say about Manhattan. I would absolutely go back to Manhattan in a heartbeat. I thought it was an incredible city. I thought the transit system, once you figure it out, you're golden. And there's just so many things that I saw there. I think the next time I do a Mania trip, because I definitely have the bug to do another Mania trip at some point, I think that one will be more wrestling heavy. But this one was just the perfect blend of wrestling and photography for me. Like, it was amazing, Mo. Like, I just, the things that I got to see and the things I got to take pictures of and just stand around was just, it was amazing. But that was for me. I'm sure that there were some people that spent all their time with the WrestleCons and the fan access and had an equally amazing time. But for me, first time in New York, I couldn't turn my back on the figures that are so legendary and so ingrained in people's memory.
That's totally fair. Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's supposed to be the weekend that you want it to be. So, and it sounds like it definitely was that. So, let's move on to post-Mania.
Do we have to?
No.
Let's
talk about the best thing, Dustin Rhodes' promo. That was the best thing that's happened so far. That was great. They made me care about Dustin Rhodes versus Cody in, what, 2 hours? Or however long they did with all those videos put together randomly.
Yep.
And, I mean, I care about AJ versus Seth because I think that's going to be a good match, but the build's going to be shite. I'm ready for Cody and Dustin, and I want to know who the Liberian is, and I'm excited to see how Fyter Fest falls apart. That's kind of where I am right now.
How about CM Punk?
Yeah, apparently he's done that, though, in the last 5 years. And you know every promoter now is going to go to Pro Wrestling Tees, try to find that hoodie, and do that exact same thing now.
That's, you know, that was very interesting to see video of him hitting a floppy GTS. But, I mean, it was undeniably him.
Oh, yeah.
And that was... You know, considering that AEW is trying to kind of hinting at him and everything, that was very interesting. I don't think we're going to see. I actually do think he'll have a match, like, within the next couple of years. But I mean, I don't think it'll happen right away. But, yeah.
He's the Liberian.
Interesting. Pardon me?
He's going to be the Liberian, isn't he?
It's possible. You know, that's the thing. I think what people are forgetting about this whole CM Punk thing is that it's not just CM Punk who stopped wrestling because of the WWE and the situation. It's also his wife. And I'm not sure that she ever wanted to move away from wrestling as much as he did.
Yeah.
Until they kind of forced her hand. And I'm not so sure that she wouldn't love to go to AEW. Like that's it. I mean, think about it. You're AJ, you know, what is her real name? April Menendez or April Brooks now?
April Menendez, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, she's seeing all this. Oh, she's seeing women main event WrestleMania. And she's seeing all this credit for this woman's revolution, and she doesn't get any credit for it. On the other hand, she started the whole thing with that tweet.
Mm-hmm.
She is possibly the most important person in all of this. And you know, I mean, I think of, I don't know, that's the part
Whoa, it was a tweet from Vince McMahon. What are you talking about?
That's it. And Stephanie, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's the people. But that's how they've rewritten history. But you know, I mean, and that's bullshit. And you know, you don't want to go to TNA. You don't want to go to holy shit, 3-2 now. You don't want to go to TNA. You don't want to go to Ring of Honor and Women of Honor. It's just a mess. And maybe she wants to get the credit she deserves, or make a difference. Maybe she wants to wrestle, and she's ends up in AEW, and that leads to Punk. Who knows? I'm just speculating. But that's the part to me that people don't mention her name. Like, they've forgotten her completely. They chant CM Punk, but she's kind of the X factor.
Well,
she may have. I mean, she had the whole year when Punk left, right?
Yeah.
And then I think it was just kind of a mutual. I think the working conditions were probably just not ideal for her being around people that had fired her husband on their wedding day.
The lawsuit had been filed at that point. So you're suing. Her husband was being sued while she's working
and
there.
Fired him on their wedding day.
Yeah.
So not ideal situation you want to be around. No.
No, and like, I'd be very interested to see where this all lands in a year's time, because we constantly hear the rumors about the TV deals for AEW, and I think if Punk's going to go anywhere, it's going to be AEW.
I think it's just as likely he ends up in I don't know. I don't know about that. It's just as likely to me he goes to ROH or New Japan. I can make an argument for any of them or Japan, but because I don't think he's going to be going back to working full schedule.
No,
I just see a special match once or twice.
I think he'll be a very seldom guy that shows up. He wrestles. He works a Brock Lesnar-esque schedule for whatever company. I think having Punk involved is a good thing for wrestling. I think having him, because then I feel like this is a thing that wrestling fans are like, okay, when's Punk showing up? When's Punk showing up? Is Punk going to show up here? Is Punk going to do this? Is Punk going to wrestle here? Is he going to face Okada? Is he going to face Kenny? Is he going to face Bully Ray or Marty Scurll from ROH? Where is he going to land? I feel like if that Band-Aid's finally ripped off, I feel like that would be good for wrestling as a whole. Because then it's like, okay, we've seen him. He's back now, and we can kind of carry on with our day now.
We never got closure with him. That's the thing. And people crave, wrestling fans crave closure. You've seen that. And the other thing is that he's mysterious. Like you know, but he's got this aura about him, despite what happened with him just getting waxed in MMA, where if he comes back, that would be the people's final memory of him. And I don't know if you're him, and he's got a massive ego. You know, it's no question. He's got a huge ego. I don't know if you're him and you want your last memory to be you just getting waxed by these mid-level MMA guys when you can control your own destiny and set it so people's memory of you. So it's something that is their last image of you. And a chance to go back into wrestling is a chance to do that.
Yeah.
So I that's why I think it's going to happen, but I don't think it'll happen. Oh my God, it's 3-3. Sorry. That's what happens when you have a hockey game on in the background and a team is down 3-0 with 4 minutes to go in game 7 and they come back to tie it.
Who tied it up?
San Jose just tied it up. Unbelievable. They lost
Portland game too. He's going crazy.
They lost Pavlovsky to a major injury. And then in the next 3.5 minutes, scored 3 goals. It's unbelievable. Okay, so what the hell was I saying about Punk? Oh, yeah, anyways, he has a chance to rewrite the narrative about his career and how he's viewed. And I think that has to appeal to him.
I'm surprised that him and AJ haven't had kids yet, to be honest. I kind of thought, and I don't know, like, obviously their personal life or anything, but you know, they've been together for a while, and she's not wrestling or anything like that.
Maybe that's another reason to think that she wants to come back.
Yeah. Because you would think by now they would have maybe had a kid. They've been married for almost 2 to 3 years by now. Maybe it's something they're interested in. I don't know, but Maybe that's a reason too. Like, maybe she thinks she still want to wrestle a little bit, and we've kind of seen that with Ronda, with whatever is going on with her and Travis Brown and their weird videos. I don't want to get into that.
No.
But she's going to try to have a kid or whatever. So, yeah, just very interesting.
It is very interesting. You know, I think it's good to see, though, that all of a sudden the guy's realizing you can hate WWE, but that doesn't mean you have to hate wrestling. You used to love it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, because the landscape changed. And if WWE keeps going the way that they're going, there's going to be bigger fish in the sea than them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are constantly finding a way. Like, after all the hype and hullabaloo from NXT and Mania, and then just what I saw for the Raw and SmackDown afterwards, I was like, I don't care. I just don't care. doesn't faze me. And then what they did with the Superstar Shakeup and just the back and forth, the amount of injuries that they had, we still have no word on Brian's health. What's up with Brian? They're being very quiet about
that. I mean, the speculation is running rampant, and obviously, I mean, that's scary. If it's a concussion?
Yeah. I mean, you saw...
4-3 now, by the way, for the Sharks. 4 goals in 4 minutes.
I'm going to just sidestep that whole thing, and because I saw a video of the Kofi stomps on Brian's head, and that... Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that Brian's all right, and it's just wear and tear, and it's not a concussion. But I think the fears are slowly starting to set in.
Well, but it's the silence. Yeah. The silence is deafening in the situation. Like, they're not ahead in the story saying, no, it isn't this, it's something else. That's the part that makes you really wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sheamus is out with a concussion now.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is hurt? I mean, Sasha's on the sidelines now, and it doesn't sound like she's coming back. I mean, that can change very easily, but it sounds like Sasha is
not an injury, though. I mean, but there's so many people that want out.
Yeah,
and it's not just people, like, we're seeing it not just people in the performers, but we're seeing it people in the other positions within the company as well, in the creative, or people like Arn Anderson, and people like, there's just so many people that want out. It's not a good place to work. No. Which is one of the reasons why it's interesting, this whole Superstar Shakeup and you know, and them putting the belts on Kofi and different things. It's like they're trying to change the narrative on this, to not be this terrible place. But at the end of the day, you got a crazy guy in charge.
Yeah, and I think you saying crazy is putting it politely. I think he's batshit insane, and it's again where you sit there and you look at the situation and you just look at everything that you read and see online. Like, I know some people are really upset and how dare Sasha Banks do this, but the simple fact of the matter is, let's break it down really simple.
They're upset?
They're wrong. I'll say it straight up. They're wrong.
She got fucked over.
Yes, she has. She and Bailey are the most sympathetic people to me going.
Like, you,
they're literal marks that wanted to be in the company. This is all they wanted to do, is not just be wrestlers, but be in the WWE. And they got fucked over. Anyways, continue, Joel.
We break the narrative down where it's not about wrestling, but it's employer doesn't communicate something that's happening to the employees to the day of, and then they inform the employees that all the travel plans that you had for the future, throw them out the window because we're splitting both of you up, and now you're going to have to figure out your own travel, and you're going to have to figure out your own travel because you guys are working completely different schedules. That's madness. That's lunacy. But that's the WWE way. It's to screw with people.
But they are independent contractors, so they can do what they want. Don't worry. No, it is absolutely, because you're saying that an employee talking to an employer talking to an employee, but they're independent contractors.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing, but that's not really what they are. That's the crazy thing.
It's insane. Not only that, but Sasha Banks said, here's the part that gets me. Say you are hurt. Say your Sasha Banks was injured instead of whatever, and so she was out for 6 months, but she still wanted out. They could extend her contract by 6 months.
Yeah.
You know what? If if Tom Brady breaks his leg, they can't extend his contract by a year. If he breaks it performing on the field, his contract will go on. It's only in this environment that this happens. Doesn't happen like that in television. Doesn't happen like that in sports. It doesn't happen anywhere else that they can extend a contract because of injury that occurs while performing, fulfilling the necessary whatever of that contract. It's only within wrestling or only within WWE. That's insanity to me.
Yes, absolutely. It is 100% just crazy that I don't know. It's one of those things when you look and you see and you're like, I just really hope this t-shirt company works out and this t-shirt company makes more t-shirts and they provide some health benefits for their guys and it's not this absolute lunacy and this crazy old man that just will not go away and just step down.
He just wants to have a Vikings experience, guys. Just let him have his experience with Vikings.
Yeah, he's a procrastinator. You know what? He wishes he could have teams in the XFL named the Vikings and the Raiders. He can't. This is what he's done. This is how he's come up with it. It's a brilliant idea. Tell you the truth, I was less upset about the Viking experience or the Viking Raiders than I was Ivar. Now Ivar. Now they've changed that name.
Yeah, that's two. Hanson but that's the one. What the hell is the matter with that?
Ivar.
Why is Hanson a row bad?
I got a question. I want to get the take on this. Is Vince purposely cutting down certain NXT acts as he sees fit? Is this his ego against NXT where he just sees certain things from NXT and he's like, nope, I don't like this and won't even give it a shot. We'll kill it before it even arrives.
I think he looks at it like a legitimate rival now and says, God damn it, I'm not going to let Paul get anything over. And I think we're going to see more of that. Like I always kind of thought Velveteen was the one person that could break through and be fine on the main roster because of his charisma. And now I'm absolutely terrified of Velveteen on the main. His name won't be Velveteen Dream. It'll be like, that starts with a V? It'll be that.
Velveeta?
Velveeta. It'll be Velveeta Dream. And he'll have like cheese running down him. Or he'll just be Dream. And he'll have a pillow when he comes to the ring and sleep.
I'm sure he'll just be Velveteen. I'm positive.
Even EC3. Was like, Joel mentioned this in a text yesterday, so I give Joel the credit. EC3, we all assume is the most can't-miss guy for Vince McMahon, and EC3 is nothing.
No. No, but Lars Sullivan will be.
Yes.
Because Lars Sullivan is big. It's true. Lars Sullivan's going to get the push from Vince that people like EC3... won't get, or you know, Ricochet or these people, like he's gonna get the push because Vince believes at the end of the day that this is what the audience wants, even though clearly this is not what the audience wants anymore. I mean, this is a guy he's stuck in 1999. He cannot stop thinking of like a guy in 1999. Part of he's 50% 1999 and he's 50% 1979. Well, that's where he is, but he's definitely not in 2019.
Well, it's still authority figure versus the main guy. Like, that's what he's doing with this Roman push, right? He's going to have Roman versus McMahon's.
And there's an element to that Becky. There's an element with Becky.
And with Becky, too. And with Kofi, too. Because it's the only way they know how to build baby faces. They don't know any other way how to build a baby face. Well, Regal and Hunter do, but Vince doesn't. And I think he's just like, it gets to the point, too. Like, if you're Regal and you're Hunter, what's the point of doing all this talent searching? It's really like a needle in the haystack at this point. Like, you go get Shane Strickland or ACH or Kushida. What's the fucking point? They're going to go to 205 Live and then they'll get their promotion and then they just job out the next day. Like, what's the point to any of this anymore for Regal and Hunter? Because they get to enjoy a guy for a year. Like, we'll enjoy Kushida for 6 months to a year. Kushida's going to come up, do something terrible, and then it's going to be over.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't know. It's so sad. It really is. And the thing about Vince is he's got to be going mad right now. Like, he's just got to be going crazy because he's given the fans, as far as he's concerned, what they wanted. He gave them. It was never his plan to put Kofi in the title. give him the title or put him in a main event of WrestleMania. And then he had to do it, and he followed the fans. And he followed the fans with Becky, which wasn't the plan. And, you know, and he gave Rollins the title, and he's super over. And then the ratings are terrible right after. And he's got to be going, damn it. Like, God damn it. You bitch and bitch and bitch and say, I don't give you what you want. Now I give you what you want. You still don't show up. But that's the problem, is he doesn't get that what he's done has ruined people's confidence in the company and him for so long that, To turn it around, you can't do it in a month or 2 months of giving people what they want, especially when you're doing a bunch of other stupid things at the same time. But let me give you and I hate it when I go on too long a rant on these things, but New Japan.
Hey, I got one too.
New Japan was good for 3 years before anybody noticed. I mean, it was excellent for 3 years before it started to build momentum. Like, it went from being on life support to putting Tanahashi and Nakamura at charge, and then AJ showed up, and Okada got there. But it was good for a long, long time, and some people were mentioning it, but it didn't have any momentum. Its attendance figures didn't go up for almost 2 years. Same thing with NXT. NXT used to be the shits. When NXT started getting good, it still took almost 2 years before people started to notice. Like, if WWE was to turn it around, Vince is so impatient, whatever. But it's not going to – you can't just give people what they want for a month or two and think that that's going to fix everything you've done. It's literally probably 2 years of the WWE being really good for them to start to build momentum and build new fans and fix it. And that's never going to happen. That's the part that's scary. 2 years is too long now. I mean, when in 1997, they were good for – From 1997, the product was excellent, better than WCW, and it took 18 months at that time, almost as long as 2 years. 18 months. It wasn't until, you know, Tyson showed up and they got into the SummerSlam the next year that they really got the momentum, despite being an excellent product for a long, long time. That's how long it takes to fix. And we'll never see 18 months of WWF being good again, I don't think, or WWE being good again the way they are now.
No. I mean, I even bring something up. I mean, I watched these first two episodes of Game of Thrones, and they've been very slow and methodical to some people, right? But I think it's just such a good job of world building and building up characters and building up with the upcoming Doom. And this episode that's going to come on Sunday is almost like a WrestleMania or a big pay-per-view, and you know the action's going to be intense. But the two episodes prior have done such a good job of laying the work that you're ready for this fight and you're anticipating this fight. And you know there's going to be casualties, and those casualties are going to have real consequences. And I have not felt those consequences in the WWE for a long time. Like, before we got on, I talked to you, it was like, oh, Bayley came out and she seemed really stern, and then she lost because Charlotte wins again. And now we get this version of Cena and Orton, of Charlotte and Becky. But the more important thing is, Bayley lost, but there's no consequence to it. It just sucks Bayley lost. And she'll just come back next week, say the same thing over again. Peyton Royce lost in 3 seconds today. But there's no consequence to it. The champion just lost. Yeah. And I think that's the one thing that Tony Khan has talked about, is that he wants to try to make win and losses really matter in wrestling. And it's something that I think has affected it. It's just a ho-hum situation when someone loses. Ricochet lost on Raw. It's like, well, that sucks. Ricochet lost. Guess he's going down the shitter now.
Yeah. And you know what? I Bobby Roode deserves to be pushed, as does Ricochet.
Robert Roode, damn it.
Robert Roode, sorry. And you can't push everybody. But you have a guy who's fresh, and instead you have another guy who's already damaged goods, and that's a shame. But it's going to take a long time to fix damaged goods back up. 4-4 now, 47 seconds to go. But it's going to take a long time to fix damaged goods back up. Whereas you have a guy who's fresh who hasn't been ruined yet, and you can't understand that you shouldn't do this. Like, it's unbelievable. I mean, I understand. I mean, I understand why they put over Roode and they put over Cesaro over Cedric Alexander. Like, I get it, because, like, if you give the top five baby faces and it's, like, on Raw, and it's Rollins and AJ and Strowman and probably, Miz and Rey, and then you give the top five heels or, Corbin, Joe, McIntyre, Corbin, Lashley, I don't even know who the fifth baby or heel is. Like, the heel side needs to be uplifted. So I get why they put over those two guys. But it's who you're putting them over and why that doesn't make any sense.
Joel, floor is yours. We've had our time.
I just don't care. I really don't anymore. After it's almost
that's
fear.
Scary thing.
It's a fear that I'm gonna sit there and guys like Gargano and Ricochet and Ciampa, and I'm sure that there's probably a few other people that I'm forgetting that I absolutely love watching, like seeing them live and seeing them perform, and I get to see a lot of people live, are just gonna be wasted away because of the old man doesn't know what to do anymore. And has constantly proven that he doesn't know what to do anymore, and that he will continue to effectively kill the business that he spent his whole life building. Not on purpose, because I don't think it's on purpose, but I think it's purely based on he doesn't have it anymore, and he's an idiot right now. He's an idiot, he's an egotistical idiot, that these aren't the playthings that he's built up, so he doesn't care. Look at Corbin. Corbin was in NXT, so now they've built him up, and he's the number one heel on Monday Night Raw.
He's the bartender, man. He's the bartender.
I mean, you got a guy like Seth that is probably going to just eke out wins and get lucky to the eventual build-up to where he feuds with Lars Sullivan, and Lars Sullivan beats him at SummerSlam. Because that's where I could see them going with SummerSlam. They get the AJ Seth match out of the way and be like, God damn it, we're going with this, and now we're gonna go with AJ Seth versus Lars, and Lars will win, and that'll be the end of it. Kofi will face KO. KO will get nowhere, and then Roman will face Kofi, and then he'll get a win. Or KO will win, and then KO will job out to Roman, and then Roman will have the title heading into Fox. Because that's
But again, this is not new.
No,
but that's the thing. This is everything you just said is true, and the exact reason why the company has no confidence and why it will take years to fix. It's because this has been happening for years. This was happening when Rey Mysterio, they put the belt on because Eddie died and then had no confidence and had him losing to everybody when he was champion. Like, it's not, and it's years. They've just been just chipping away at their fan base doing this.
Yeah.
And to the point where it's come to a head, and now the ratings are down 25%. It's ridiculous 1 year drop. And they're not going to be back next year. It could be another 25% next year. And it's unbelievable, and I've been screaming it from the top of a mountain for a long time. But here we are with this company that has got these billion-dollar deals, and yet I don't believe they're going to be around forever. Because if you have no fan base, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You can't sustain it. You're still spending money. If there's a point where it's going to stop coming in.
I'll say this. I had planned on going to SummerSlam.
Yeah.
In Toronto. And I'm still going to Toronto. But I don't think I'm going to SummerSlam.
No, go to NXT. Go to NXT.
I may go to NXT, but I may just go to the Jays game that day, to be honest, and see Vladimir Guerrero play. And there's also an MLS game that day. I probably would have more fun at the MLS game, personally, right now.
You probably would.
The only reason I'd go to NXT is because I'd like to see Kushida. And that's the only reason. It's just because of one performer that I don't know when I'll get a chance to see again. At the pinnacle that they will have in North America, because he's getting older.
And he will just be, it'll be a nightmare when he's out of NXT.
Yeah, and he's my favorite performer from Japan. Obviously, Okada is great. Tanahashi is great. I've just always really enjoyed Kushida.
Kushida's amazing.
Yeah, but I'm not going to SummerSlam anymore, the show, I don't think. And even guys that I had gone with are like, why would we go to SummerSlam? We can go to a Blue Jays game. We can go to MLS. There's other things we can do around the city. It doesn't really – we just don't want to give our money to Vince. It just got to that point when we were just discussing the Superstar Shakeup and kind of everything Joel's talked about. It's like, why am I going to watch Lars versus Seth or Roman versus freaking whoever for the title. You know, and Becky versus Charlotte 1085.
But it's
and Lacey Evans versus whoever. Like, it just, who cares?
Well, it's like AJ versus Seth. I'm like, that's great. I want to see that match. I don't want to see the match under the way that they are presenting it. There's a way to do it to make me excited, and there's a way to do it to make me go, meh, whatever. And that's how they do everything. It makes me go, meh, whatever. It needs to be, this is, you know, so great. I'm going to see a 5-star match. And make me believe that and build it up and build the tension. And again, it's about long-term storytelling and long-term characterization. Two things they don't do anymore.
And I just think there's so much competition as far as the sports world goes. DAZN's doing such a good job building up the boxing scene.
Hey, again. Oh, my God. DAZN is like, they are aggressive.
They just got the premiership. You can't watch Champions League without having DAZN. Something I didn't know because I've just gone to this one bar that you can watch Liverpool at for a lot of Champions League. And when I wanted to watch, it's like, oh, it's just on TSN. No, DAZN's done such an aggressive job in both the States and in Canada now of being aggressive and, again, bringing boxing back, using Bellator and doing such a good job on that. It's something that I would consider if I were AEW is jumping onto DAZN to be completely honest.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to be end up on, you know, TBS or you know, something like that, one of the Turner-ness. But if I'm them, I'm thinking the only reason you don't want to end up on DAZN is because then you can't do your own streaming service. But DAZN was freaking advertising during WrestleMania on WWE.
Yeah, that was like,
That was surreal. I was like, does Vince realize that he's letting the competition advertise on him?
Yeah, that was
they
a thing.
They have MLW on there.
I saw that and I was like, that's the DAZN. No, that can't be. There's no possible way Vince would advertise DAZN. That would be lunacy for him to do. I looked at the logo and I was like, son of a bitch. They're advertising. I can't
believe it. It was shocking.
It was surreal to see. It was like, there's no, what's happening? And the other funny thing was the Dark Side of Wrestling of the Ring had a banner that flew over MetLife Stadium all the way up till the pre-show kicked off.
Oh, you're kidding. That's amazing, too. Yeah. That's amazing. I'm going to binge watch that is what I believe I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your view on the Brody one, Mo.
It's, you know, it's not, I mean, that's the problem with the Viceland is not, the programming isn't available in Canada, so we have to get inventive to be able to see it, which is, you know, hey, you got to do what you got to do. I would watch it some other way if I could.
Absolutely. They have to be more aggressive because there's so much, like, looking at all the sports you have right now, right? You're going to get a fantastic second round of the NBA and the NHL playoffs. You know, baseball is getting to an exciting level when you have going on with the Yankees and the Red Sox starting to come out and other teams there. Like I said, championships, Champions League, as far as the world is going, is the biggest sporting event that's going to happen now with some exciting matches. You have Messi in there. You have Salah from Liverpool. So that's going to get the excitement of everyone. You have the women's
The heavyweight division in boxing right now, which
and
is...
And that like, too, and thank you.
The heavyweight division, which is historically what is when it gets hot, then everybody notices everything's happening in the other divisions. They have some super talented guys at the head of that class right now.
DAZN's done such a good job of marketing it, if
they can make the super fights, that's what it's about. If they can make the super fights between those heavyweights, you're going to see a new golden age of boxing come out of it. And you know, and it's difficult. It's politics. You know, anytime you're talking about the fight game in boxing, more so than anywhere else, where it's, you know, it's multiple belts in organizations. But if they can get that done, it's going to be huge. And meanwhile, AEW is coming, guys. And AEW is going to be big right away. And even with New Japan kind of flatlining and ROH stumbling, there's tons of ways that you can watch good wrestling without having to worry about WWE.
Yep, absolutely.
And Mo and Joe, you know who's in charge of DAZN right now? Who the head person that came up with this framework of the boxing and everything? It's John Skipper, who is the head of ESPN for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knows how to run a sporting network. And it's something that I think Vince and whoever they had in charge of the WWE network really miscalculated doing that. And I think it's something that having someone like Tony Khan with AEW is a fantastic person to beat the hell, because Tony knows how the NFL works to a degree as far as a sport, and he knows how the Premier League works as far as a sport and how you draw in everyone. And Tony's seen things like the Championships Leagues and UEFA come together, and he's seen how Super Bowls and big primetime matchups on Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football all run. And I think that's something that Tony Khan can bring to AEW. He obviously doesn't have the mind like a Dick Ebersole or a John Skipper have for things they've done in the past. But I think Tony Khan having those experiences of being around those type of people is going to be huge the way they use AEW on television against WWE. And I think Vince has kind of lost his edge with that, because, again, it's like you were saying, Joel, like you've been saying, Mo, and kind of came back. It's just the rotating circle of, I was like, God damn it, heel authority figure, or God damn it, put this guy that nobody really wants in charge. And even though you have the Kofis and you have the Beckys, how we got there also didn't. Kofi, it was good because it was short term, but even the Becky, it's like we're here, but now we get Lacey Evans and we get Charlotte again. Like, it's like fine.
You know, I really think the idea that, I mean, I'm intrigued by this idea that Vince is on purpose now destroying the NXT creations because he sees it as competition or out of hatred to the fans. And I can't get over that. And it's like completely illogical. And yet, I don't know. I mean, Raw did 2.37 million viewers on Monday night. There was a point where TNA was regularly doing 1.8. Mm-hmm. So, like, AEW doing 1.8 and being that close to Raw right off the bat is not inconceivable. And, you know, Raw's ratings aren't that much better. I mean, I bet you, you know, SmackDown did probably do like 2.2, 2.1 tomorrow. Like I say, that's not that far ahead of what TNA was doing at its peak.
Who are the stars, too, by the way, guys? Like, who are you marketing right now to the mainstream right now?
Roman.
Who you marketing? Well,
that's who they are. Yeah, yeah. Roman. But this is why I would say, like,
where's Braun never Strowman did have been?
Well, that's exactly another thing. But, you know, this is another thing that, like, we never did really have the discussion about the, you know, the importance of the casuals. And I say the casuals aren't important right now. The casuals are important. Like, you can never say the casual audience isn't important, because they don't get that billion-dollar deal without casual audience, even though it's not really the casual audience watching now, you know. But they don't get a billion-dollar deal from Fox without the casuals. So you can't completely dismiss it. But the point is that when you your product gears only towards the casuals and it chips away at your hardcores, to the point where they no longer want to watch, and the casuals don't stick around, then you're left with nothing. The way to get casuals is not to say that you completely throw out the importance of them. What you do, though, is you again, if you have a great product for 2 years, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, 1997, he started getting momentum. He didn't take off until 1998 to the mainstream. But it's because the people that were hardcore were going, you got to see this guy. He's the coolest guy you've ever seen. You got to watch this guy, or you got to see this guy, The Rock. He's hilarious. He's so charismatic. Who's the guy right now that you're going, you got to see this guy? There's nobody.
There's no mic skill, and they don't do for Ricochet.
Yeah, there's to a degree, but yeah, you'll say he's got some great moves, but it's not the same. Like it's just not. I mean, you're not going to say that about Rollins. Rollins is a fantastic professional wrestler. AJ Styles is a fantastic, but you're not like, you got to see this guy. You won't believe it. Like he's a, you know, that wow factor is missing. But that's partially how they present them too. They don't present them like stars in the same way. So, but again, it's one of those things you have to understand that the way that you get the casuals is by making the hardcores tell them how good it is. And that's how you get them. If you shoot angles just for the casuals, it ends up going nowhere. It's that hot-shotting. They've been hot-shotting for weeks now. Hot-shotting doesn't work. You can bump a rating for a little while or get a casual audience for a little while, like they did with Ronda. But at the end of the day, it doesn't work. The way that you build up a bigger audience is by making the people that love it talk about it and tell other people they got to see it.
Yeah, It's one of those points where everyone feels cooled off. Like, no one feels red hot coming out of Mania. No one feels like must see. No one feels like, oh, I gotta check this out. Like, this is must see programming, or this is a must see performer. WWE has done a masterful job at making sure no one gets over. Like, they've gone out of their way to make sure anyone that was getting over isn't getting over, and anyone that's not over, they're driving further along to be like, we can get them over, we can prove that we can do this.
We can push Reigns and tell you he's the most charismatic guy in the world to get him over to that level and just cause a backlash. It's like Kofi. Kofi's immediately, like, people still like Kofi, but it wasn't Kofi that was over. It was Kofi's story. It was the underdog story that was over. As soon as he wins that belt, man, it's just not the same. Same thing with Becky. It was really, what is Becky? Is Becky the most charismatic person, like, at the Rock level? No. Is she a talker at the level of a Ric Flair? No. Can she wrestle like an AJ Styles? No. But she's a really, really hard worker, and people really respected her, and they wanted, and she's good in all categories, and they wanted to see her be rewarded. And that was what caused her popularity, not because she's at the same level as other people in any factor, but it's just that everything came together. But now, she's just, you know, a good wrestler who works really hard, who has both belts and is a good talker, but she's going to get overexposed. She's going to be on both shows. She's going to defend the belt twice at WrestleMania, Money in the Bank, and she's going to get overexposed, and people will lose interest.
Well, I thought Lacey Evans was challenging for both titles.
No.
She was, and they changed it. Originally,
she's wrestling twice.
Yeah, so now she's facing Charlotte, because Charlotte beat Bayley tonight for a chance of the future title opportunity. And then Becky said, you know what? I'm facing Lacey for the Raw, and I'm facing Charlotte for SmackDown and Money in the Bank, because I'm the double champ and I can do anything.
I don't even have anything to say to that. Carry on.
When Dean Ambrose came out in Montreal, you know, it was off air, and he says, I still like wrestling, and I like wrestlers. And the crowd pops like mad. That says everything you need to know.
Yep.
The crowd, that's the biggest thing AEW can do, is promote, we are wrestling. We're not sports entertainment. Because
didn't TNA have that?
Nah, well.
That was a slogan, though,
wasn't it? But they didn't. They were sports entertainment. I'm sorry.
They can say
whatever they want, but they were sports entertainment. But if you actually, like, but that's it. Vince McMahon. Tonight I'm watching 205 Live, waiting for Joel to show up, because, you know, he's a slacker. And Orny Lorcan's on there, and he goes, he's been studying, and it was David Otunga, he's been studying his sports entertainment for 10 years, mastering his craft as sports entertainment. And I'm like, good Lord. Like, that's the type of thing that completely has turned off your core audience. And again, be proud of the fact you're wrestling. Nobody thinks it's very ironic that Vince McMahon changed the image of pro wrestling from being what it was when it was sleazy to being something mainstream, and he's the one who's afraid to promote it.
Yep. The thing that I'm the most interested in is, come next February, when the XFL takes off, and knowing now what the AAF did, and maybe wanted to, because have you heard the story of the, Joel, have you heard how the XFL came back?
Yeah, yes.
You mean about how they got offered all that money for the rights to the name?
Well, pretty much Charlie Ebersole went to him and said, we'd like to redo the XFL. Vince McMahon's like, that sounds like a great idea. And then he turned around, hedged all the money from his stocks, and started the XFL before the Ebersoles could get into it.
Oh.
And that's why the Ebersole started the AAF, which recently filed for bankruptcy and is done. So there's that weird story. So I just feel like when it comes to February, he's going to try to do everything to prove that he can still run a football league, and hopefully that just takes him away from the product, and who's ever in charge can do whatever they do.
But you still have the inmates running the asylum, and all those inmates are being appointed by Vince.
And there's no way Vince can't be a control freak. He is one. He can't not be. And the fact is that he has failed at everything. He failed at running a restaurant. He failed at running a bodybuilding federation. He failed at movies. He failed at promoting boxing. He promoted.
Hey, man, don't shit on the chaperone. That's a 5-star movie.
He failed at promoting boxing. You'll remember he promoted a Sugar Ray Leonard fight at one point and did
Barkun
commentary.
Barkun was supposed to win that fight.
Pardon me?
Barkun should have won that fight.
He should have. He was younger. He was bigger. He was stronger, but he wasn't as skilled. You know, he failed. He's failed at failed at football in the past. He's failed at everything he's ever tried in his entire life except for wrestling.
Mm-hmm. And he's always seemed to try to be something else different, and that's
always
why I think
wanted
he
to be something else.
Always goes back again to the same thing: the heel authority figure and all the other stuff that just has worked for
but
him.
There was no heel authority figure before 1999, 1998.
I know, but he sees the Austin thing, and he's like, it worked.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and he, I guess even with Hogan, he's like, squeaky clean babyface, it worked with Cena. And those are the two things that he knows that works. Everything else, and that's why, like, medals with the Becky thing, medals with the Kofi thing. Like, he hasn't even done anything with Kofi for the follow-up.
Everything about the television presentation is boring. The way that they do everything, like the way that they structure the show, it hasn't changed in forever. You know, it's the backstage vignettes, the way they're done is the same as they've been done for years. You know, the way that they start matches, and the way they open with a 20-minute talking segment, the way that the matches are interrupted by commercials, like all this stuff is the presentation is flat too. Because you can push new guys, but if the product feels the same because you're presenting it the exact same way and you haven't freshened anything up in years, you're not going to succeed. Boy, it's sad. But AEW is going to be great, guys. Let's end on that. Getting late.
Yeah, that Dustin Rhodes promo, man, got me excited.
Great stuff. Great stuff. I can watch Being the Elite, and I'm going, this is put together for $100.
Yeah, by the way, Mom.
That's nothing like no production values, and yet still feels better than Vince's billion-dollar company.
I know I've never seen Sammy Guevara have a match in my entire life,
mm-hmm.
but I know that everybody hates him, and I am so invested in Sammy Guevara as a character, but I have never seen him step inside a wrestling ring. I have not gone on YouTube to watch any highlights of him. But I know what the Sammy Guevara character is. I've seen one Joey Janela match in my entire life, and I know what to expect from him. You know, and I've seen maybe two MGF matches in my entire life, and I'm invested in that character. Yeah. That's what BTE has done, and that's why it's so surprising that WWE has never invested ever in their entire life. Oh, my God, Dame Lillard at the buzzer for the Blazers to beat OKC. Wow, what a sports night.
They won 4-1, right? They were up 3-1?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
On PG's head. Ah! What a sports night. Now we'll this overtime. But the point is, like, how has WWE not used social media, YouTube, and all this stuff?
They've tried.
They do use it to build the way, like, a Sammy Guevara has been built.
Oh, yeah. There's more characterization in BTE, but they tried. But the fact is that when, you know, Zack Ryder used YouTube to get over,
mm-hmm.
they killed it.
They didn't know what to do. And then when they finally take it over, they don't know what to do themselves. They just
look at the JBL show. That was BTE before BTE, and they didn't know what it was. That had the whole Brian versus the Bear thing, and like Cody and Bear were hilarious on there. And they just didn't know what to do with it. But that was BTE before BTE.
You know what? That's a good point. In a lot of ways. Yeah, but how about this? How about the Firefly Funhouse? Let's end on this, guys.
I'm kind of, like, going to give it a chance. I'm, like, both, like, mixed up. This is probably going to be wrestle crap and probably be worst of the year. Or this could be surprisingly kind of fun. I'm mixed on both sides of it right now.
The bar is so incredibly low right now. Like, it's crazy how low the bar is that at this point they can present anything and be like, well, it could be decent by WWE standards, so we'll see.
I absolutely had no idea what to make of that. I'll say this. Bray Wyatt's a great performer, and he's really into it. his performance is terrific, and it's weird. I don't know if he's a babyface or heel. I don't like it's. But the thing is, it reminded me so much of Attitude Era, and yet not good Attitude Era. It reminded me of the stuff in the Attitude Era that you cringe at. But I'll say this: at least it's different, and Bray Wyatt's talented and he's trying.
Sometimes you just gotta take a chance.
Yeah. How does it translate to the ring? That character once it gets to the ring, I just don't know how it translates to all that. The ring, if he comes out to that ring entrance music, I don't know.
I'm interested because the buzzard was made by a famous horror prop maker,
and yet it looks like shit.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing where I'm like, I don't know if that's true or not.
Have you ever seen? Mo, because you guys do your movies, right, of like kind of shitty horror movies and stuff.
Yep.
Have you guys considered Thanksgiving?
We have considered Thanksgiving.
And that's what that reminded me of, was the turkey from Thanksgiving. Exactly that. I'm like, how has Mo not had this? Because this looks like the turkey from Thanksgiving.
When I first saw the segment with the puppet, I was like, dude, maybe if you lit it differently, lit it better, made it more mysterious. Like, it looks so... just fake. Bad, like a fake, and it's too well lit. It's I don't know. His character feels out of date in the current environment of WWE. It's got a little edge to it, definitely. But this was the problem. His old character had a little edge to it, and they ruined it because it felt out of place. Like it was better in NXT. So, all right.
Yeah.
I think I need to call it a night.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I think the one thing that helps it is that Bray has given everything into it, and when you do that, that definitely helps.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyways, Joel, thanks for telling us your stories of Mania. Mo, thanks for coming on, as well as always, for the one of these big pods. I don't know when we'll get the chance to do this next one, but I'm excited whenever we get to do it. Gentlemen, thanks for a great pod. Joel, any last words?
No, I'm all wrestled out.
You're all wrestled out.
Everyone, enjoy the week.
Don't I get to tell a joke?
Next time. Oh, yeah, go ahead, tell a joke, because then I want to watch the end of the San Jose game.
Hey, yeah, sure, me too. What has an IQ of 232 teeth?
What's
The front row of a Donald Trump rally.
Enjoy the day.
Goodbye. And good night. Bye.